Omnibus Amendment 2. David, did you have any remarks? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief, and Michelle has a brief update, which will not take the time that we've been allotted, so we'll get caught up a little bit. The SASE model was essentially completed late last year. It was 4 years in development and serves as the best available tool that we have for evaluating the effects of phishing on habitats. By January, it was evident, though, that the Habitat Committee had hit a roadblock in how we proceed with mitigation measures because of the problems inherent in having areas that were closed for both groundfish and for habitat. So then in February, we had the final SASE peer review, which in which they identified the fact that SASE is now ready to go ahead and be used to direct us, not to make our decisions for us, but to help us with making decisions on these mitigation measures. Fortunately, the council then in April gave us some clarification on how we would be moving forward, and that clarification was very, very welcome. And what it did was that it made it possible at that point for us to begin to actually move forward with a speed that I was surprised at. We're moving forward expeditiously now, and on Omnibus Amendment 2. Along with that, the PDT met for 2 days on June 8th and 9th, discussed management options to minimize adverse effects, and also cleaned up what was remaining to be done on deep-sea coral mitigation. At the meeting, the PDT identified for us a set of vulnerable habitat areas and has begun to put together both SASE-based and extra-SASE information for each of these areas. And based on that, they are now developing advice for the committee on adverse effects minimization options. A good part of that was done during the two-day meeting. It was a really very productive two-day meeting. And they're refining that now and also refining options for coastal zones. These refined recommendations are going to be presented to the advisory panel on July 20th and to the committee on July 21st at a full day meeting. The committee then is going to take this advice and refine that into precise proposals, which will then go back to the PDT for further analysis in August and to the committee late in August, and then will be presented to the council in September. So what we plan to have for the council in September is a fully developed set of alternatives for habitat actions that will include opening some areas which are now closed and taking action in other areas that have been identified as habitat critical areas. On balance, we're going to wind up with a much more reasonable, a much more defensible habitat mitigation program. And having said that, I'd like to go ahead and have Michelle give you a briefing on where we stand and where we're going.
Thank you. I'll be brief as possible. Dave stole my thunder on a couple of things, so that should speed things up. This should work great. Great. Dave already covered the fact that you voted in April to expand the scope of the amendment to include consideration of possible changes to the groundfish rebuilding closures. Obviously, this is going to influence the timeline of the action, which I recognize has been long already, but it also kind of changes our strategy for how we're developing it and brings in the groundfish committee and plan development team in ways that we hadn't previously anticipated. So just as an FYI for everybody, I think you probably may have already seen this, but we published an updated notice of intent on the omnibus amendment. That actually came out on the 17th, and it's if you don't have it posted on the Habitat webpage on the Council's website, And we're the comment period closes on July 18th, but we're looking for some comments on kind of the procedural issues about the change in scope, but also some substantive comments about development of measures to minimize impacts to EFH, as well as development of measures for ground fish areas, including the utility of the existing closures or alternative closures to assess needs of ground fish stocks, impacts of any changes to those closures on other activities, kind of follow-on activities, special access programs, those kind of things. So please, any comments that you have or that anyone in the audience has, we'd welcome those. Oh, I don't know why that's all feedbacky. And the, if they're ready in time, the committee can certainly take a look at those when we meet in July. So Dave kind of already covered this, but just to be clear. So Dave was kind of going back and forth between measures and alternatives, and I think this is kind of what is being envisioned as maybe a little bit different than actions that have been developed in the past. So what we're in the midst of right now is developing habitat management options. And those are kind of an a la carte menu of things like remove the closed area one habitat closure, implement a new habitat closure in the Great South Channel, change what gear restrictions are allowed in the Western Gulf of Maine closure, implement a research area on Cache's Ledge. So kind of individual options. And we have discussed for quite a while now that those options are going to kind of interact synergistically and produce an overall adverse effect for all of our fisheries. And it would be very difficult and cumbersome, and we'd produce a nearly unintelligible document if we needed to assume that every option could be added in or subtracted independently. And so what we discussed, even from a habitat perspective, was to package these individual options into three or four sets of alternatives that could then be considered together and linked, and that would kind of simplify the analysis on our end and also your understanding of how the measures would work together. So now that there's also the possibility of updating ground fish areas on the table, what was being envisioned is that we would, just because of when, mostly because of when the ground fish PDT and committee are available to begin work on this, that we'd continue developing habitat management options, and then as there's time, the ground fish committee and plan development team would begin looking at ground fish areas and develop ground fish options, and then we'd need to combine those into alternatives. And then at that stage, the council, there would be informational presentations throughout about, you know, what those options are and what's on the table, so that we can all be on the same page, but that, you know, after all those options are there and packaged, that at that stage the council would approve alternatives for analysis. And then, of course, we'd go through the normal process. Once you'd review the analysis, we'd have preferred alternatives, public hearings, and then eventually at some point the council will approve the omnibus amendment. And I don't know what I'll do after that. I haven't even really thought about it. So just to go into a little bit more detail about some of the habitat options that we've been discussing, just to keep everybody up to speed, the broad goal is to obviously minimize the adverse effects of fishing on essential fish habitat. And so some things we've discussed are to either modify or eliminate some of the current habitat closed areas. The eliminate has been focused to this point on the areas in Georges Bank. Or also to change some of the gear restrictions. Something that we've discussed is eliminating the restriction on shrimp gear in the Western Gulf of Maine area, for example. Another set of measures that we've talked about are to add some new habitat areas. In particular, we've been discussing some areas up on Georgia Shoals and also in the Great South Channel. And so measures for those areas haven't fully been discussed, but it could include restrictions on certain types of gears or closures to certain types of gears, limits on total effort by certain gear types, that kind of thing. We've also discussed research areas. And then finally, something that hasn't really been discussed yet, but I think we need to, is what items habitat-related could be implemented by framework in the future. So the other kind of set of options that are going to go in the omnibus amendment that are habitat-related but in kind of spatially different areas than a lot of the other options I just talked about are some measures to minimize the effects of fishing on deep-sea corals. And so the way that this is kind of being thought of is that the PDT is working to develop a set of areas that would be designated as deep-sea coral zones. Mm-hmm. And the committee and the PDT have discussed in the past kind of two different sets of areas. There would be these localized or discrete areas, single canyons or a couple of adjacent canyons in the area in between, some localized areas in the Gulf of Maine, seamounts, things like that, that are, you know, on the order of 10 to 20 kilometers on a side type of size. And then there's also discussion of a broad area that would be off the slope largely to wholly unfished in deeper waters as well. And those two types of coral areas might be combined. You'd have a broad area and also some localized canyon areas, for example. And then once those areas that are important for corals have been identified, then as necessary, we might take some action to restrict fishing in those zones. And then something that I actually didn't put up here, but we've been working pretty closely with the Mid-Atlantic Council staff in particular. One of their staff is on our plan development team, and the understanding is that the New England Council will move forward on which areas are appropriate and then be taking action more specific to the fisheries that we manage, and then the Mid-Atlantic may decide to take complementary action as warranted. Something else we've discussed in the context of corals, I believe this was raised at the January committee meeting, was the idea of having restrictions on fishing be implemented later in a coral area by framework. So that's something that we need to develop. And then also there was a few different research-related measures that the PDT felt could be very useful because there's still a lot that we don't know about these animals. So Dave already covered this. The PDT met this month. It's still June. And we're going to be having some conference calls, at least one later this month. And then the next two meetings are going to be in Mansfield on July 20th and 21st, the advisory panel first and then the committee, just to receive all the information that the PDT has compiled and recommendations and hopefully refine the options and send some things forward for further review and analysis. And the agendas for those, maybe not next week, maybe late next week or early the week after that. And again, the timeline is pretty approximate at this point, but we are hoping to have options for you all to review, at least in terms of habitat, so the EFH kind of on the shelf and then also the coral areas in September. Depending on other groundfish committee and PDT workload, they can hopefully start work on the issues for the omnibus later this year. How long that development's going to take is, you know, kind of an open question. And then once the two sets of habitat and groundfish options are put together, then we can start talking about how to combine them and bring some alternatives to the council. So that's all I have. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions for Dave or Michelle? It's things like the big dig. Just keeps going.
Didn't cost billions.
Dave?
Yeah, this process is finally starting to move. It's clearly moving right now, and it needs to. It needs to move quickly because we need to segue from this into the ecosystem management plan, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow when the Pate report is discussed because it has an influence on that as well. So, but it's moving. I'm pleased with the way things are going finally.
And me too. Anyone else on the council? Ron? Don't tell me this is fatally flawed, Ron.
I'll save that for the next part of the session. I mentioned this at the last council meeting. In the scallop fishery, the way we mitigate our adverse impact is primarily through our rotational fishing. And I think that being a close observer and participant in this process, that I would be suggesting changes to the access areas on George's Bank for the scallop access areas to meet the goals of the omnibus amendment, and also to address bycatch issues. But when I brought that up to the council last time, there was no vote on that. So I'm just wondering where in the process, as this is moving on and we're starting to propose management solutions, there doesn't seem the option for adjusting the scallop access areas on George's Bank is not here. So that tool is being the primary tool that we have for mitigating our impact is we can't apply it in this process. So where do we bring that in?
Are you asking, can the habitat omnibus alter the scallop access areas, or are you suggesting that you would like to see the habitat omnibus have options that exclude scallopers from a level 3 closure?
Well, I'll give you an example. One of the we're finding out in the SASE model that the current closure in the top of closed area 2 is not as useful as areas to the west of that. Now, there's a large amount of scallops in the top of closed area 2. It would tremendously minimize bottom time to have access to those scallops compared to fishing at open area strategy. What I would do is I would design two scallop access areas in closed area 2, one that extends to the west to incorporate some of the more complex bottom, if you will, that the SASE model wants to protect. And then by allocating access area trips to that area, we have a definite control on frequency and intensity, which is what drives the model. Similarly, I would change the boundary lines on the southern part of the existing closed area to scallop access area for three or four reasons in addition to habitat. That now gives the committee, the scallop committee, options for reducing yellowtail bycatch and minimizing habitat impact. I would also change on the western side of George's the existing closed area 1 and Nantucket lightship boundaries to again allow the council the option to control trips that would minimize adverse effects to habitat, as well as more clearly define what our bycatch rates would be. Where do we do it? In other words, it's a true ecosystem approach. It's not just looking at habitat as the controlling issue. It's combining achieving scallop optimum yield, reducing bycatch rates of various species, and minimizing swept area. But looking at all those parameters, we could do it within the scallop management plan. But I'm afraid that the habitat plan is going to end up, you're going to be confronted with go or no-go solutions on how to address mitigate impacts in the channel. And way back in the beginning of scoping for Amendment 15, I wanted to divide the open area so that we at least could control days at sea, north and south. We haven't done that. So we have no way to control frequency and intensity of scallop fishing in the channel currently.
Yeah, Ron, the 21st, you're going to be surprised. We'll talk. I think you're going to have important input on the 21st.
Okay, and habitat research areas. That's the other thing that I really would like to get involved in. Are we going to be doing that on the 21st as well, defining those areas?
I would not let this go forward without having that in place. That's a PAPE report issue, a very, very strong one. I have no intention of being party to any any movement of this that does not include some way of evaluating the actions that we take. That has to be part of it. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not fatally flawed yet.
Apparently not. Okay, back to the council. Anything further? Okay. Done with the FH.